Imagine trying to build a fully monetized, encrypted, real-time software business from scratch. And imagine doing all of that in 96 hours completely alone.
I mean, that is just completely wild.
Right. That is exactly what we are looking at today. 166 commits, 17 pull requests, three massive formal milestones shipped.
All in just 4 days.
Exactly. Welcome to this deep dive, everyone. We are tracking the sheer velocity of software development today through an excerpt from the PanPanMAO Developer Diary.
Specifically, we're looking at days 20 through 23 from February of 2026.
Yeah, and I want to be clear right up front. This isn't just us reading a changelog today. Our mission here is to capture the exact moment a passion project undergoes a complete metamorphosis.
It really is a metamorphosis. You literally watch a cool collection of features shift almost overnight into a living, breathing business.
And honestly, it is a masterclass in how technical architecture is just deeply, inexplicably tied to human psychology.
It is a phenomenal 4-day window to analyze. I mean, seeing that level of output, 166 commits in just 96 hours, usually implies a scenario of pure chaotic hacking.
Oh, absolutely.
You picture a solo developer running on caffeine, you know, just throwing code at the wall to see what holds up. But transitioning from a fun side project to a real business demands the exact opposite approach.
Right. It demands a rigid, almost punishingly strict foundation. Because before anyone can build complex business systems at breakneck speed, they have to establish that discipline
Yeah,
first.
you have to organize the chaos.
And in this diary, the very first move to do that was implementing a milestone framework. Specifically, the developer made this very deliberate choice to use structured pull requests, or PRs, as a solo creator.
Which is pretty uncommon for a solo dev.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second. Why go through the friction of formally reviewing your own work when you are the absolute only human being building the application?
It sounds kind of tedious, right?
It reminds me of the main character in the movie Memento. You know, the guy with short-term memory loss who has to leave Polaroid photos and sticky notes for his future self just to know what's going on.
Oh, wow. That is actually a great comparison.
Right, because writing a formal request to merge code that you wrote so it can be approved by you sounds like unnecessary bureaucracy.
Well, what's fascinating here is that the Memento analogy hits the nail on the head. The developer even notes in the diary that reviewing your own PRs feels totally silly at first.
I mean, I would feel ridiculous doing
It
it.
acts as a non-negotiable forcing function. Moving at this kind of velocity means your future self, you know, even just 3 weeks down the line, is effectively a stranger.
You will literally have no memory of why you engineered a specific solution.
Exactly. So these solo PRs serve three very distinct purposes. First, they're a permanent documentation of intent.
Okay.
Second, they provide a diffable change history, meaning a literal visual map of what lines of code were added or deleted.
Right, so you can track your steps backwards if things break.
Yeah. And third, and most importantly, they force the developer to articulate exactly what they're shipping and why it matters to the business.
And the format wasn't just a casual sticky note either. Every single one of these 17 PRs included a highly structured description.
Very structured.
We are talking a formal summary section, a detailed changes table, and a test plan with actual checkable boxes. You are basically building the guardrails before you step on the gas.
And setting up those guardrails is vital because the very next step is tackling the absolute hardest part of building any application:
Monetization.
monetization. Once you start handling people's money, the margin for error drops to zero.
And that shift happens in milestone one, or M1. This was a massive 100-file pull request. It completely shifted the app from being a free product to a free trial with a purchase option.
The developer had to build the invisible plumbing of a credit economy entirely from scratch.
Which is no small feat.
The technical hurdles here are incredibly steep, starting with what developers call anonymous to authenticated merging.
Wait, what exactly does that mean for the user?
Think about the user journey. For a new app, you want zero friction. You want a user to drop in, poke around the interface, maybe use some free credits to get a fortune reading.
All without having to create an account or verify an email?
Exactly. You don't want them to have to remember a password just to try it out. But the second they decide to buy more credits or they want to save their reading history, they suddenly need a permanent account.
Let's break down how they solved that, because the magic trick here is the redeem code system.
It's so clever.
The user starts out as an anonymous user in the Supabase backend. Zero sign-up friction. Now, let's say they want a premium fortune reading.
All right.
They go to a separate payment portal, buy a redeem code, and come back to the app. The input component auto-formats their code as they type, ppm dash four characters dash four characters.
Right, and the act state machine moves from idle to checking the database to redeeming the code.
But here is the brilliant part. When that anonymous user enters the code, the backend actually sets that exact code as the password credentials on their temporary account.
Oh, wow. It permanently hardwires that anonymous session into a real account.
Exactly. The redeem code literally becomes their login password for the future.
It elegantly bypasses that traditional please create a profile roadblock that just destroys conversion rates for so many apps.
Building complex state machines like that at high speed inevitably leads to bugs, though. The diary highlights PR103, which was a critical fix for a bug that was actively affecting production.
Yeah, they ran into a database constraint issue related to something called the Leonian app type.
What actually happened there? Like, what is a database constraint in plain English?
Let's look at it like this. A database constraint is basically a bouncer at the door of your data. You give the bouncer a VIP list of acceptable values.
Okay, follow that.
In this case, the constraint was called Elmcott-Sapchek, which tracks the cost of different AI features. But the Leonian feature, which is their annual fortune reading, was accidentally left off the bouncer's list.
So when a user tried to generate their annual fortune, the application code said, here's the data, and the database bouncer said, you're not on the list.
Yep, and completely rejected the action. It caused total insert failures.
Wow, the data simply couldn't be saved.
It is a brittle reminder of how a tiny missing definition in your database schema can break a massive, highly anticipated feature for the end user.
Speaking of things that break the user experience, we need to dive into the cross-tab credit sync issue.
Oh man, if there's one thing that will completely destroy user trust, it is messing with their money.
Let's visualize this. You are a user. You have two browser tabs open. You buy credits in tab A. You switch over to tab B to actually get your fortune read, but tab B hasn't refreshed.
It's still showing your old empty balance.
Immediate panic sets in. You assume the purchase failed, so you buy the credits again. Boom, double charge.
It is the exact same anxiety as sitting there hitting refresh on a frozen payment screen and accidentally buying two non-refundable flights to Chicago.
Customer support nightmares are made of that exact scenario.
They really are. The solution the developer implemented is a brilliant showcase of modern web architecture using Supabase real-time subscriptions.
How does that prevent the double charge?
Instead of a browser tab having to constantly ask the server, hey, did my balance change? Did my balance change? The tab essentially subscribes to a broadcast channel.
Okay, so it's listening instead of asking.
Right. Every single tab a user has open is actively listening to their specific credit row in the database. When tab A adds credits, the database instantly broadcasts the change outward.
And tab B updates its visual UI in under a second without the user ever hitting refresh.
Exactly. But the diary points out that this sounds straightforward on paper, but it required some heavy lifting regarding lifecycle management.
Let's clarify what lifecycle management actually means in this context, because it's not just turn the connection on and forget it, right?
Not at all. Think of a browser tab like a physical room, and the database subscription is the light switch. When the user opens the tab, when the visual component mounts on the screen, you have to turn the light switch on and subscribe to the data.
And when they close the tab or the component unmounts, you have to turn the light off. You have to cleanly unsubscribe.
Because if you don't, and the user keeps opening and closing tabs, you are leaving hundreds of invisible connections running in the background.
The browser will eventually run out of memory and crash.
It creates a massive memory leak. And the trickiest part of lifecycle management is handling dormancy.
Like when someone closes their laptop lid.
Exactly. What happens when a user puts their laptop to sleep, the browser tab goes dormant, the internet connection drops, and then they wake the laptop back up 4 hours later.
The application state management has to recognize the broken connection and gracefully reconnect without the user noticing.
It's a lot of invisible plumbing.
So the infrastructure for handling money is bulletproof, and the tabs are syncing. But you still have to convince the human being looking at the screen to part with their money.
That introduces the psychological layer of M1.
Right. The developer built the upgrade prompt component, featuring 7 highly contextual upgrade triggers.
Because placing a generic buy now button on every single screen is a fantastic way to annoy your users. These triggers target specific emotional moments.
What's an example of one of those moments?
Well, there is a trigger that appears if your credits run out right in the middle of a fortune reading. That is a moment of peak urgency. The user is highly invested and wants the rest of the answer immediately.
Now, Contrast that with a trigger placed in the daily hub dashboard when a user simply has a low balance.
Right. That is a low urgency, high awareness placement. It acts as a gentle reminder, not a hard sell.
The developer also built a post-reading satisfaction trigger. You just received a great fortune. You are feeling positive. That is the perfect psychological window for an upsell.
There's also a referral prompt framed entirely as a social action, like giving a gift to a friend.
And my personal favorite detail has to be the 24-hour dismiss cooldown. If a user clicks no on a prompt, the application backs off for a full day.
It won't show them another prompt for 24 hours. It is aggressive monetization, but wrapped in genuine empathy for the user's experience.
But there's a fatal flaw in relying entirely on those emotional upgrade triggers, right?
Yeah, if a user only opens the app when they are in crisis or when they have a burning life question, your business revenue is totally unpredictable.
You have to manufacture a reason for them to open the app when they are perfectly fine.
You have to engineer a habit.
And that leads directly into milestone two, architecting habit. This is another massive PR that overhauled the app's entire engagement model.
They transitioned the software from an event-driven utility where you show up, get your answer, and leave to a daily destination.
And they achieved this by building the Daily Hub.
The Daily Hub consists of 5 distinct, customized cards designed to give you a fresh hit of information every single morning.
You get a buzzy day pillar fortune, a zodiac horoscope, a tarot card of the day, a Chinese almanac, and a divination prompt.
And building this wasn't just slapping some text on a screen.
Far from it. The level of polish required a massive structural overhaul, particularly in the Zengxing or astrology module.
The developer wrote a 347-line trilingual dictionary covering simplified Chinese, traditional Chinese, and English.
And translation in code isn't just swapping one word for another. Different languages structure sentences entirely differently.
This dictionary had to translate complex planetary alignments, zodiac signs, astrological houses, and over 70 different result strings perfectly.
They completely redesigned the natal chart with a gold on dark aesthetic, degree tick marks, and interactive tooltips.
They even had to introduce full database encryption for the new Synastry feature, which calculates compatibility between two people.
Because you are suddenly saving and comparing the highly personal birth times and locations of two different individuals.
Right. Security isn't a feature at that point. It's a strict requirement.
Here is where it gets really interesting. Well, and where I have to play devil's advocate and push back on some of the architectural decisions made for this Daily Hub.
Okay, let's hear it.
Let's talk about the pre-generation architecture. To deliver these daily fortunes, the developer decided to generate the AI content via a cron job.
For anyone unfamiliar, a cron job is just an automated task scheduled to run at a specific time.
In this case, at exactly midnight Beijing time, the system uses the Gemini AI to write the daily fortunes.
The automated endpoint generates the Baziz and Zodiac fortunes, saves them to a daily content table in the database, and even sets up a 7-day auto cleanup script so the database doesn't get bloated.
But listen to the technical overhead required to make that happen. The developer had to build an entirely separate background system.
It's a lot of extra architecture.
They had to implement IP-based rate limiting, capping the system at 30 requests a minute to prevent abuse. They had to fight with time zone consistency to make sure midnight in Beijing triggered correctly on servers hosted elsewhere.
They even had to implement something called constant time XOR for secret comparison, just to secure the endpoint.
Wait, what exactly is constant time XOR? That sounds intense.
Let me jump in on that piece, because it highlights the extreme lengths the developer went to. When a system checks a password, it usually checks character by character.
Okay.
If the first character is wrong, it rejects it immediately. If you're a hacker, you can measure the milliseconds it takes for the server to reject your guess.
So if it takes slightly longer, you know you got the first character right.
Exactly. It's like listening for the click of a safe dial. Constant time XOR is a cryptographic method that forces the server to take the exact same amount of time to reject a password, whether one character is right or all but one are right.
It completely eliminates those timing effects.
It is hardcore security engineering.
But all of this massive backend complexity, all of this architecture was built for one single reason.
So that when a user opens the app at 8 a.m., the text loads instantly.
Exactly. Instead of the user having to watch a 3-second loading spinner while the AI generates the fortune on demand, I have to ask, is saving a 3-second loading spinner really worth that staggering amount of technical debt and complexity?
If we connect this to the psychology of the user, emphatically yes. The developer actually calls this out directly in the diary.
What do they say?
They wrote, "This is a product insight disguised as an architecture decision."
A product insight disguised as an architecture decision. Let's unpack the psychology there.
Think about the fundamental difference in how you perceive an interaction. If you open an app for your daily horoscope, and you have to sit there watching a spinner animation for 3 or 4 seconds while an AI thinks, it feels like a transaction.
It feels like you are pulling a lever on a software machine and waiting for it to spit out a product.
Right. But if you open that app and the content is just there, waiting for you, loading in 0 milliseconds, the entire paradigm shifts.
It no longer feels like a machine. It feels like a personalized newspaper that was quietly delivered to your doorstep before you even woke up.
And the perceived value and quality of that information skyrockets.
Wow. When you frame it like that, the 3-second spinner isn't just a minor point of friction. It is an illusion breaker.
It constantly reminds the user that they are talking to a piece of code. That instant load is the bedrock of building a daily habit.
So the back-end complexity, the cron jobs, the cryptography, that is simply the tax you pay to create front-end magic?
Precisely.
Okay, so you've built the psychology, the habit loops, the encrypted databases, and the instant load magic. But there is a glaring question remaining.
How do you know if any of it is actually working outside of your own head?
You need a reality check. And that is milestone 3, distribution.
M3 is a fascinating pivot point in the diary. Compared to the massive 100-file pull requests of M1 and M2, this milestone was achieved in PR number 10.
It's only 11 files changed. Structurally, it's tiny.
It's essentially just integrating post-hoc analytics and setting up event tracking for when users redeem codes.
They used an after function in the code, which is a clever way to ensure that the event tracking happens silently in the background.
It sends the data to post-hoc after the server has already responded to the user.
Ensuring the analytics don't slow down the user's experience by even a millisecond. So what does this all mean? Why is this tiny 11-file PR considered a major milestone alongside the massive credit economy and the daily hub?
Because without analytics, you are flying blind. You are building for your own ego. This tiny PR is what finally closed the feedback loop for the developer.
As noted in the diary, they could finally see what users actually did rather than what the developer assumed they would do.
It is always a deeply humbling moment for any creator to watch real users interact with their systems.
It represents a massive paradigm shift in how the developer approaches the business. The diary explicitly states that before this 4-day sprint, before M1 through M3, the guiding mindset was always, what feature should I build next?
But after integrating this analytics loop, the mindset completely flipped to, what behavior should I drive next?
That shift in thinking is the exact moment a passion project becomes a business.
Conversion funnels, retention hooks, daily engagement metrics, referral incentives, these are no longer viewed simply as engineering problems to be solved with more code.
They are fundamentally business problems that just happen to use engineering as the tool for the solution.
For the first time, you have a developer looking at a dashboard and obsessing over user retention rates, instead of checking off a list of cool features.
It perfectly encapsulates this incredible 4-day sprint. We've tracked the journey from using solo pull requests to forced discipline onto chaotic momentum,
to engineering frictionless upgrade paths that respect the user's emotional state.
We've seen the sheer willpower required to build massive background cron jobs and cryptographic security, all just to achieve the psychological magic of an instant load daily habit.
And finally, grounding all of that grand sweeping architecture in the undeniable reality of user analytics.
It serves as a brilliant reminder that shipping code is never the actual goal. Changing human behavior is the goal. Code is just the mechanism.
That is a great way to put it.
As we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a thought experiment to mull over in your own life. Whether you write code, manage a team, or just organize your own daily tasks.
Think back to that pre-generation architecture we dissected.
Think about the massive lengths this solo developer went to, the hurdles they jumped just to eliminate a 3-second delay. What are the 3-second loading spinners in your own life or work?
What minor, seemingly insignificant points of friction are you ignoring because they are, quote unquote, good enough?
But might actually be fundamentally breaking the way you or your clients or your family experience a task? In your own daily projects, are you just checking off a list of features or are you actually designing behaviors? Think about it. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the PanPanMao Developer Diaries. We'll catch you next time.